everyone, and welcome to In Conversation, a video series from Shift. Today, our video partner is Glenn, Diversity, Inclusion, and HR Solutions. And our guest today is Jackie Glenn, who is the CEO and founder of that company. Welcome, Jackie, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
We are very, very excited to have you. So can you start off by just introducing yourself a little bit and telling us who you are and what you do?
Well, again, my name is Jackie Glenn. I currently live in Boston, Massachusetts. I hail from the sunny island of Jamaica and came to this country when I was at the ripe age of 19. I came to this country as a nanny, and it's all chronicled in a book that I recently wrote, Lift as I Climb, an Immigrant Girl's Journey Through Corporate America. So I came here as a nanny, did my nanny stint, and then moved to Boston, went back to school, undergrad and graduate school, and started working in the healthcare arena. Did that for a couple of years in HR. That's where I owned my HR skills. And then I moved into the technology industry, where I started out in HR, and 18 years later, I left the company as the chief diversity officer. And so my last job was at a company called EMC. Now it's known as Dell EMC. And I was the chief diversity officer for EMC, the vice president of global diversity for Dell. I left there July of 2018. As I said, wrote a book and started Glenn Diversity and HR Consulting. And here we are today.
Here we are. That's incredible. What a journey to get here. Can you tell us a little bit more about Glenn Diversity and HR Solutions, what kind of company it is, and what you and your team do together?
Well, Glenn Diversity, Inclusion, and HR Solution, and maybe I should add equity. Every time you look at the diversity and inclusion arena, we keep looking at it and adding more words to it, because it's one thing to have diversity, it's another thing to be included, and another thing to feel like you're being treated equitably, yeah. And then another thing to feel like you belong. So at Glenn Diversity, Inclusion, and HR Solutions, we're a boutique consulting firm. And to me, a boutique is just a small firm with myself and two other partners. And we basically market ourselves as a chief diversity officer in resident or on call for small and medium-sized company. Not that I can't go into a large company, because I came out of a large company, but lots of small and medium-sized companies have no one doing their diversity work. Right. So we go in and we help them set up their strategy. We provide some training with some of our partners for them. And I act as a trusted advisor to either the HR, CHRO, or the HR lead, or the CEO, to just give them ongoing diversity consultation, counseling. And I also provide a lot of roadmap to help them out with their strategy.
Yeah. When we talk about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion practices in corporate America, are you able to kind of place, you know, the history for me a little bit, in terms of even in the last, you know, 18 years or 20 years that you've been working in the corporate structure, how has that focus changed over the last couple of decades? Has it always been an important focus of a lot of companies, or is it kind of a new venture that companies are taking on?
You know, Grace, I wouldn't necessarily say it's always been a focus. There are some companies out there that it's always been a focus for. And I know for the company that I left, there was always a focus on that. I think that, you know, the focus for individual company differs depending on the leadership beliefs. And so I think over the years, you know, most large companies always have someone leading their diversity efforts or strategy or initiatives, whatever you call it. And I'm a firm believer that diversity is never an initiative, but more a strategy. Mm-hmm. And what is your statement around it, and what are you doing about it? I think if you fast track 18 years later, you know, and you look at where we are today, then I think more and more companies are understanding the importance of having someone in their organization to pay attention to this important area. And you know, I know we're going to talk a little bit more about current state that we find ourselves in, but I think a lot of organizations out there understand the need for it. I think a lot of organizations, which doesn't make them bad, you know, get a diversity person because it's the right thing to do. And we can talk a little bit more about while it's the right thing to do, is it practical and does it make it right to just hire someone because it's the right thing to do?
Yeah.
So I'll keep it right there.
Yeah. And something that you say, this is kind of all over your website and a lot of your materials that I really appreciate. I think a lot of times when we have conversations around diversity, and I'll even go as far to say anti-racism in corporate America, we talk about it being important and we talk about it being the right thing to do. But a word that you use a lot is precious. You say the preciousness of diversity. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I haven't heard before. And I would love to get your thoughts around not only why is diversity important, which I think is kind of a silly question. Why is diversity precious in a corporate environment?
You know, Grace, when I shot some of those videos on my website, we weren't where we are today. And I still do believe it's precious in the sense of, if you look up the Webster's meaning of precious, it just seemed like something to have and to hold. And I, you know, like a wedding vow, it's precious. And, you know, when you have a diversity, when you, you know, study have shown that diversity breeds innovation. And so when you bring diversity together, a diverse group of people together, it creates innovation. And without innovation, companies die. And so that is a fact. And so when I talk about the preciousness of diversity, I go at it from a business standpoint. I don't go at it from a sympathy or empathy standpoint. I go at it from a business. Because if you care anything about your business, you will understand that it is precious. Now I also say it's a business imperative and not a social nicety. That's a big tagline. I've always used it, and I really believe it with my whole heart. Gone are the days when someone would just hire someone like myself and said, you know, Jackie's a woman, she is an immigrant, she is over 50, and she'd be a good person to have. It's just a nice thing to do. Now they would hire me and said, you know what, she will do a lot to our business in terms of goodness. And so I want people to look at people like myself. And if you're hiring someone that is different from your overall population, please know that diversity breeds innovation. And if you're not innovating and transforming as a company, your business will not thrive.
And what's the difference between the actions as opposed to the words? Like you just said, it's a business imperative, not just a nice thing to do. So when we talk about DEI efforts in the corporate workplace, what is the distinction between real action and just saying the right things?
Right. And that important? Box checking or just politically correct. I think gone are the days, and a lot of practitioners who have been in the field, like myself, notice and can smell a box checker a mile away. And so I think the difference is someone who is really looking at DEI as a business imperative, have this role reporting into the right level, so it's not buried deep down in the organization, but it's either reporting to the head of HR, or like I like to say, the CEO. That's when you see a company have a diversity role and it's reporting right into the CEO and it sits on the leadership team, then you know that that is not a box checker. When you see them buried in the organization with no budget, no staff, and nobody in their individual contributor, you know that that company, most of the time, not all the time, is just doing it to say that they have a diversity person there. And I would caution companies that are doing the latter not to, because people are at a point right now where they're calling you out. Or better yet, if you're thinking, Grace, of hiring someone in your company and you know, positioning it like five levels in the company, do not do that, because it will not be respected, the role, and you will not move the needle with the role there.
Right. When you're looking at, and we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier in terms of these last couple of decades and what you've seen change in the corporate landscape, do you think that right now the conversations we're having, the actions we're seeing, and some of the actions we're not seeing and we should be seeing, do you think that we're fundamentally in a different moment right now? Or is this just kind of a continuation of the same old, same old?
No, I think we're in a different moment. I think if I may be very raw, I think a lot of people are sick and tired of the bullshit.
Yeah.
And especially Black people. And so someone asked me the other day, Grace, what have changed about me? I think if you've met me 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't say bullshit on a podcast. And I'm unapologetic. I've always been unapologetic. But if you can square that, I'm unapologetic about the work I do. I think we find ourselves at this moment where people are tired, they're angry, and they are being very intentional and deliberate. And they're calling companies out that doesn't mirror the marketplace that they sell into or the people that they work around. And company that are still omens genius at their leadership level and on their board, they are being called out and they're being held accountable. And this, while I know there's a lot of people out there who want this moment we find ourselves in of racial inequity and racial unrest to go away, I don't think it's going to go anywhere. So if I was to counsel, and I keep counseling company leaders, I would say, get your organization prepared with courageous conversation skill set, so you can be prepared when someone like myself walk into your organization and talk to you as an employee, you can speak to your company's strategy statement around DEI.
Yeah, it's like the inevitable is coming.
Here.
It's here.
It's here.
Yeah.
It's here, Grace. It's here.
Yeah. Your work that you're doing these days and the work you do in your company, can you talk to me a little bit about the fact that we're in this kind of moment right now? I'm sure you must be very busy, and I'm sure your work has evolved a lot over these past few years, if not just the past few months and weeks. So what kind of work do you find yourself doing today? What's keeping you the most busy as you're doing your work in this current moment?
A lot of the work I'm doing right now, Grace, is around foundation setting. I've worked in diversity, equity, and inclusion for such a long time that you could spend your time doing a lot of busy work. When companies call into Glen Diversity, the ones who find themselves telling me what they think they need, I stop them. Because I use the analogy of going to a doctor and diagnosing yourself in the doctor's office. And so normally if you go to a doctor and the doctor just start writing you a prescription without checking, drawing your blood or giving you an x-ray or MRI or a CAT scan, you will run out of there and you would not want that doctor. Look at me as the diversity doctor, the DEI doctor. And what I do first, I'm doing the diagnostic. And the diagnostic that I do with all of the companies that I've been working with now is around courageous conversation skill set. How do you have a courageous conversation? What are the components of courageous conversation? Why is it important to have courageous conversation? I think until companies are grounded in why it's important to have courageous conversation, we're not going to get anywhere. I don't care how much strategy we have, Grace, and how much roadmap we have, and how much mission and vision we have. People who can't even say the word Black in some organization because they're so nervous. People are so polarized right now that my webinar is about unpolarizing the workplace. We really have to get to a point where you, Grace, is not walking around so afraid to have a conversation with me like we're having because you're so afraid to say the wrong word.
Right.
So in that webinar, I'm offering that as a starting point. That is the prescription that I'm writing right now, Grace. And after they've taken the prescription in its entirety, you can't only take half bottle. You have to take the whole bottle.
It's like an antibiotic.
Yes, you got to finish it. Yeah, and once you finish it, then I take you on my 5-step approach. as an organization, and I come in as a trusted advisor.
Can you give any practical advice? So the audience that we kind of speak to in this series is a lot of companies working in tech. They work in media. They work in advertising and production. Like a lot of corporate structures and a lot of corporate entities in this country, tech media, historically very white, historically very male, it's getting a little better now. If we're talking to companies working in this space right now, and they say, what's the first thing I can do? I recognize there's a problem. I'm looking around and I'm not seeing any Black people, any Latinx people. I'm not seeing any women. What is that first thing that anyone can do to get started?
Let me add to it. They're not seeing any Black. They're not seeing any Latinx. They're not seeing any Asian. They're not seeing, you know, the company is homogeneous. And so the first thing I'll say, stop doing the busy work and stop the avoidance. You know, a lot of companies tell themselves what they want to hear. And so I'm going to company, they'll say to me, oh, we're doing some work where we have some diversity. And right now, I came out of tech, so I can say, when you talk to a lot of tech companies, they say, oh, well, we have women here and I have two women working here. Two, you know, gender diversity is good and we still need that in a lot of these industry. But let's talk about ethnic diversity from a racial standpoint. And I think, you know, what the advice I would say, I would give to them is A, stop the busy work. B, own it that, you know, you're not diverse and you need your help. And then really don't rely, that's number three, I'm giving a lot. So don't rely on the Black, one or two Black or African-American or brown people in your organization to be the teacher. And then the last one, invest in awareness and education. And that's where I come in.
Yeah. Are there any resources? I guess your website is probably a good place to start, but yes, any resources or places that someone could go, or books, podcasts, films that you would suggest for people just starting this journey? I think a lot of people right now, I should say a lot of white people right now, are having that kind of waking up moment of like, oh boy, I haven't even gotten started yet.
Yeah,
I need to get started. Where can they go?
So, you know, I am a lover of Audible and I'm an avid walker, or, you know, I don't run anymore. And so I'll tell people to download my girlfriend, Mary Frances' book, Mary Frances Winters. She just came out with a brand new book and I thought I brought it in here, but her first book that she wrote, or one of her book, is, We Can't Talk About That at Work. We can't talk about that at work. It's a great book. You can download it or you can buy our copy. White Fragility, I don't know Robin DiAngelo, but I just finished reading that as a practitioner. And she came, you know, she brought it. And so the movie that I love the most, and I always recommend, there's tons of movies, but Just Mercy. Mm-hmm. It's a great movie and it's free right now on Netflix and a lot of the platform. But I'll say, educate yourself, Google stuff, Google different terms, and start listening and hearing. And, you know, one of the reasons why I love Robin DiAngelo's book is because she's a white woman and she's writing about race. And sometimes I think for white people, it's sometimes a little bit more palatable if they hear it from their own. And so those are some of the things, you know, Google, research, but I love listening to books on Audible. So go there. And then if you're not a book person, then watch some movies. And I love Just Mercy.
Yeah. I'm halfway through White Fragility right now and I'm very, very much enjoying that read, listening to it on Audible. And I haven't checked out Just Mercy yet, but I'm very much looking forward to it. So,
and then I just watched one other movie and I found it on, I think it's on Amazon Prime, and it's about code switching. And the title of the movie is Sorry to Bother You.
I've heard a lot about that movie. And I haven't seen it yet.
Especially if you're a millennial and you're listening, or even I'm a boomer, and I, I had to get into it, but it really just shows how when you go into corporate America as a person of color, sometimes you can lose yourself in trying to conform. It's a great movie, so I would recommend that one too.
Yeah. And actually, that's something that brings up another question around in the corporate landscape, how we can kind of make sure we are keeping diversity, equity, and inclusion at the forefront of our thought. We're talking a lot about recruitment and making sure you're getting the right people in the door, making sure you're seeing a diverse group of candidates for any given role. Can you talk a little more about the belonging once that hire arrives? So let's say you are a Black man or an Asian woman and you come into a corporate structure and all you see are white people. How can the corporation or the company make sure they're not just getting a diverse group of people in the door, but they're keeping them there?
Right. And I think that was the reason why, as people look back at all of their diversity efforts in different corporations, we noticed that, at first they would say, we can't find anyone, but then they noticed that they would find people and people would not stay. People would leave. And when you talk to some of these people, they would say, I didn't feel like I belong there. There was nothing for me. I was the only one. I wasn't invited to the parties. No one asked me for lunch. My personal experience, when I first started at the technology company years ago, I cannot tell you how many times as a new employee, I was sitting there alone and nobody would ask me to lunch because I looked different.
Right.
More and more people recognize that was a problem. So instead of just saying, we want to make sure we have a diverse organization that is inclusive, we want to make sure that we could foster belonging. So when we bring a Jackie on board, that she felt like she belonged, and Grace, she felt as if she was treated equitably.
Right.
Because it's wanting to bring me there, but to treat me bad, to exclude me from meeting, to exclude me from company after work, social stuff. I'm not going to feel like I'm being treated to pass me over time and time again for promotion and don't give me an explanation. That's not equitable treatment. To have me train someone who is less qualified than me, and then the person is now my boss and I have no explanation why I didn't, that's not equitable. So more and more people are saying, we just don't want to bring in diverse talent, but we want to make sure that they feel like they belong, they're included, and they're treated equitably. And company has to really look at the landscape. So one of the company that I work for, one of the things we did was make sure that every time we brought in a person of color, we gave them a mentor that looks like them and one from our talent group. So the person could ongoing be talking about their job still, because the recruiter job is not just to place the person in the organization, but also is to make sure the person is thriving. And right. Then the person that the mentor that looks like you would be someone like me that's saying to you, Grace, how are you doing? What do you need to know? If we recruited you from another state, do you have a place to go get your hair done or your hair cut? Because if you bring the person into a predominantly white organization in a predominantly white town, and they're Black and they don't know where to go get a manicure, a pedicure, or their hair twisted, right, then that's going to be a problem. And so
they're not going to stay.
You want to make sure that you equip the person with all the tools, both personally and professionally, that they're going to need to be successful.
Yeah, I think that's so often overlooked. It's like you mentioned, box checking to get someone in the door and kind of do a head count and say, great, cool, we've got our 15% diversity that we need, and now we're good, we're done. And that's not even half of the journey. That's the first step, but there's so much that comes after that. And I think that's so often forgotten when we're having this conversation, is it's not just enough to get someone in the door and say, great, we did it. Congratulations, pat yourself on the back.
How do you retain them, and how do you make sure that they have a career there that they're proud of, they feel included, they're thriving, and they're growing at the company? So you really have to, I always tell people to go back and take a look at the company culture. Mm. What is the culture like? Is it an inclusive culture? Is it a culture that just reward people that look like the majority? Is it a culture that is self-aware of their culture and is doing things to evolve the culture?
How do you change that if it's not, does it come from the top down? How do you change the hearts and minds? I mean, you could have a huge company structure with 2,000 people. How do you change the culture?
Well, keep in mind, I came from, you know, originally a 60,000 global company, and then it went to about 140 something thousand employee. Wow. And, you know, you change the color, you take a top and bottom approach. So yes, you have to have the buy-in from the leadership, but you also have to have the buy-in from the mid-level manager. I like to call them the frozen middle, because the top level manager leadership can always say they want diversity. They want to make sure people are being treated equitably. They want everyone to feel like they're at the table. But if the mid-level manager, the day-to-day your manager, is not supporting you, Grace, so you go into an organization, you're the only woman on your team, you ask to go to a women's conference, a diversity women's conference, and they're like, why do you need to go to that? You don't get any support from the mid-level manager. So, you know, that person haven't gotten the message that we're trying to recruit and retain more women in the organization, right, people of color. And then if you're at the individual contributor level, you also want to be a part of it so you can give your input. Not that it's always going to be taken, but you can give your input and feel like people are listening to you, or at least you get a chance to say your piece. And so I think it's a, you know, you go from the top, but you also have to go to the middle, and then also to the individual contributors.
Yeah, I think that's so important to feel like every employee is empowered in one way or another, because I think especially in a huge corporate structure like you're talking about, one single person might say like, there's not really anything I can do.
Right.
It has to come from the top, but you can.
You absolutely can. When I started my journey, I came into an organization as an HR person. I wasn't a diversity person, but I saw that there wasn't a lot of me. And so I put my, found a few other people of color, black people and brown people, and I put together the first employee affinity group. And why did I do it? Selfishly, Grace, because I wanted to see some black people who I can equate with. Yeah. And I knew that the company was dispersed all over. And so I sought them out, and we put together a black employee affinity group. And we help our Latinx coworkers to put together one. We also did it with our LGBTQA coworkers and our different abilities or disability employee. And it went on from that. But the first one was a black, and I took the initiative because I knew that I would benefit from it. So this is a point where if you're in an organization and you're a person of color and you're just sitting there complaining, you need to stop. You need to go out. You need to put out your ideas out there. And I did that with my other full-time job. And so I always feel like, you know, if you want change, you have to help make change. And yeah, you can't just complain about it. You have to have a solution.
Yeah. Well, Jackie, I can't thank you enough for your time and your expertise. I know how busy you are, especially now, but I feel like you have been doing this work. This has been your life's passion for so long, and it's so, so great to hear your perspective and to hear some of your real concrete advice that people can actually go out and start doing this. It's not enough to just talk and say, wow, we're having the conversation. That's where it starts, but to actually be able to go out and do something about it. So thank you for your time. We loved having you, and hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Thank you, Grace. And you know, I'll end on this note. Do less talking and more doing. So let your audio match your video. And I love to tell organization to do that, because they could talk all day and do nothing. Yep. Again, I'll end on the note. Words are always appreciated, but action right now, at this time we find ourselves in, is necessary. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.